Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award winning Niall Boylan Show.
There was a Red Sea poll conducted by Virgin Media Television. And this is in relation to what is happening at the moment. And as we all know, in the news on a daily basis, we are seeing protests or a problem with people having a problem with refugees. But according to the Red Sea poll, almost two-thirds of Irish people say the country should not continue to take an unlimited number of Ukrainian refugees, according to the new research. The survey was commissioned by the Virgin Media Television and carried out by Red Sea. And it looked at the concerns around migration into Ireland. 83% of those surveys, that's certainly a landslide, disagreed that Ireland has the services to cater for the number of people arriving here. In other words, we don't have enough services. Accommodation, housing, doctors, medical, I don't know, everything, education. That we don't have the services to increase the population that quickly. That is their concern. Meanwhile, 4 in 10 respondents said they and their families have poor access to services due to refugee and asylum seekers arriving into the country. Almost half of the respondents feel more positive towards Ukrainian refugees coming into Ireland than asylum seekers seeking international protection from other countries. Almost two-thirds of people, 64%, disagreed that Ireland should continue to take an unlimited number of refugees fleeing the war in the Ukraine. And the figure rose to 70% among respondents aged 35 to 54 years of age. 8 in 10 of those surveyed said Ireland does not have the services to cater for the number of asylum seekers coming into the country. And just over half the people believe the recent rise in protests outside refugee and asylum seeker accommodation centres are not justified. Over a third of people said they would not support a migrant accommodation centre in their area, not in my backyard, rising to 39% in Dublin and 42% aged between 35 and 54. So it's quite clear that the majority of people think the government are getting it wrong. That's the vast majority of people believe the government are getting it wrong. They're not racists. They're not anything else. They just believe the government are getting it wrong. Now, as you know, last night there was another protest for people in East Wall. And during that protest, an individual was run over by a car. Somebody is being charged with that today, so we can't obviously continue to talk about it. But it just goes to show you the way this is heating up. There is an anti-protest protest, so to speak. They're calling it a rally on Saturday. And that will feature people like Christy Moore and others who will be on stage. And there will be a march from Parnell Square down to the Customs House. There is also going to be an anti-immigration protest at the same time, I believe. And I hope that all concerned on both sides will keep it peaceful. Now, we did give both sides the opportunity to come on the air today and discuss this. And we reached out to the organisers of the rally on Saturday, who believe that all refugees are welcome in Ireland. But they refused to come on the air. They have all declined an opportunity to come on the air. Many of them we spoke to on the phone, and they're quite willing to give their opinion to my producer, Jane, on the phone, but not willing to come on the air and give their opinion. And I have no idea why. But one person who is willing to give his opinion is Carl Dieter, who is a regular on the show, financial analyst and also commentator. Good afternoon to you, Carl.
Hey, Niall.
Now, Carl, I noticed your tweet last night. Now, this is, again, in light of what happened last night. There was a big protest last night. Many of the streets were blocked off. It's quite common now. It's 2 and 3 times a week in different parts of the country, but particularly around East Wall, where it all started just before November. So you got stuck in traffic.
Not for the first time.
And this is the second time. And I'm sure it's quite irritating, quite annoying for people trying to get home when they get stuck and the tunnel is closed and all that kind of stuff. So what did you decide to do?
Well, the 2 times it happened, I actually get out and ask people, you know, so are you the far-right racist that I've been reading about? And that usually heats up the conversation pretty quick. But, you know, I am actually willing to see what you say when that charge is leveled against you. And both times, I was actually pleasantly surprised because people didn't start to attack me. I have to say I'm very pro-immigration because I am an immigrant. I'm not from Ireland originally. I came here, you know, back when I think the country was far less hospitable towards foreigners of any type. And I was surprised because I got speaking to some people who were concerned mothers, concerned fathers, people who brought their kids along, and you know I think that really what they're trying to say is, look, we have concerns about people arriving here, running from a war. And I don't, you know, no one said, oh, we hate them, we don't like them, you know, they're bad people, whatever. They're like, they could be coming over with like serious mental issues from having seen or lived through terrible things. We don't have good mental health supports. We don't have proper medical supports. They're being kept in buildings that aren't suitable for accommodation. Like, we would never ask people here to live the way that they're being forced to live. You know, I said, well, if you've got a choice between, you know, living in an old ESB building or Mariupol in Ukraine, I think you'll still choose the place in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, look, we accept that. But, you know, our children are there, and suddenly there's these gangs of grown men around the area. It seems to be a particular issue, by the way. I would say there is a serious gender-oriented issue where no one...
But there also seems to be a differentiation between, and according to the Red Sea poll, people seem to have a level more sympathy and empathy towards Ukrainians than people seeking international protection from other countries. So there seems to be a difference.
Well, there's definitely an understanding of that because it's a war and it's a hot-button topic. But at any given stage, there's like terrible genocides happening in the world that we don't regularly hear about. You know, there's countries in Africa where people are going through villages, just murdering everyone. There's terrible things happening in the world all the time. And so I think there is a great deal of compassion because Ukraine is in the news. You know, it's so prevalent, and we can really, it's very tangible. What I was saying, though, I did find is that there did seem to be a bigger issue with lots of men being around as opposed to women and children. Like, no one said to me that they had an issue with women. No one said they had an issue with children. There was constant reference to...
middle-aged men.
Basically,
men. And in relation to, I suppose, their concerns... some of the concerns are led by misinformation and some of them are genuine concerns. And I'd like to give a lot of most people the benefit of the doubt. But when you say, you know, you didn't get any racial undertones or certainly you didn't feel that way, what you said was in your tweet, I didn't encounter any overt racism, but I did hear worried parents who feel voiceless. Now, there is no doubt there have been individuals. We've seen some of the videos over the last
six,
you know, with the, you know, the chanting of the out, out, out and stupid comments like, at least the Chinese came here and opened takeaways, you know, these kind of silly comments. So a lot of those comments do have racist undertones, but you believe that the vast majority of people are there because they're people from a community who have genuine concerns that the government are not doing this properly.
Yeah, well, look, I didn't do it, but I'm pretty sure if I was to go around and ask all these groups, who do you vote for, they'd probably all say that they vote for kind of left-leaning political parties. So, I mean, I don't believe that they're ardent right-wingers. The other thing I would...
Why do you think they're being referred to constantly by political, you know, the political landscape, in the media? They're being constantly referred to as racist or extreme right-wing.
Well, because, you see, that's like the holy trifecta of how to shut someone up. So, I mean, like, I would have sometimes, if I'm thinking about this, someone might say, oh, you would say that, you're anti-immigrant. I'm like, well, I'm not from here, so I'm very pro-immigrant.
Yeah,
oh,
you would be left-leaning as well.
I'm kind of left-leaning on a lot of social policy. Economically, I'd be a conservative. Like, I think we have to be responsible about how we run things, about how we provide for them, you know, about getting value for money in public expenditure, which in Ireland... like anywhere in the world, that's considered centering. In Ireland, that's considered economic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that it's a good way to make people become voiceless. I wrote a piece for the Irish Independent. It was 2021. I went to an anti-lockdown rally, and it had been billed as this big far-right affair, a racist thing. And I went and I took statistics, and I spoke to lots of people through there. And I spoke to people who were from Africa, black Africans. I spoke to travelers. I spoke to lots of religious minorities. And what I found is that when I actually statistically went into it, that what we brand as far right is really quite often, okay, there are some who totally fit that bill. They're wrong-thinking idiots, in my view. But we take other people who might fit some of it, and we say, we've got to pigeonhole them. We have to give them a name so that we can look down on them. And rather than look at the actual facts or the nuance or any of the truth on the ground, that it's just easier to look down your nose, show some moral outrage, signal how virtuous you are, and then move on. But the people who do that aren't the ones who actually live with the repercussions of it. I spend most of my day around kind of Summerhill and North Circular Road or on Pier Street in town. So, like, I'm in the city all the time. And I can tell you that the people in Dublin, are there racists? Of course there are. Are there magicians? Are there people with one arm? I mean, there's one of everything in this town. By and large, the people I spoke to, they're worried. They have valid concerns. They have concerns about resources. Like, I'm fine. I have a nice house. If I need health care, I go pay for it. But what if you're not? Or what if you don't have a lot? And now you're sharing out those resources. And it's the morally correct thing to do. But it gets to a point where it's like, well, how much is enough? I mean, love thy neighbor doesn't mean that you give them more than you would give to yourself. And that's the thing is, you know, it really affects the working class.
So does that fit in with the line that we hear, look after our own first? And that line, by the way, you know, that's used by people on a regular basis. Because, look, if a government doesn't look after their own, inverted commas, first, it's a dereliction of duty. But do you believe that line is overused or used against people as some sort of weapon?
I think people sometimes say things like that because it is logically correct to say you look after your own first. I mean, like, I would never look after someone else's child before I'd look after my own child. And I think when in a nation that that's why they're a nation.
But do we have a humanitarian obligation then to also look after people who are in need and treat them as our own?
Absolutely. Well, no, you have an obligation. And when you take them in, they should be treated as your own. But your obligation is not to the point of no return or to the point of absurdity where you do worse off for the majority in order to...
So in other words, the citizens suffer financially and for services suffer because of it.
It's really clear, like in every religion that preaches, whether it's Islam or Judaism or Christianity, that no one is saying you help to the point of no return. You know, that is absolutely not the case. It's not the case in structural policy in any nation. The only place that's true is in the mind of some people who tend to be agitating for, you know, endless immigration, which, again...
We've got a problem now, because now that we have allowed ourselves into the situation we're currently in, there's a story in the paper today... And the rights of a homeless Afghan asylum seeker who arrived in Ireland last month are now being breached by the lack of available emergency accommodation, according to the High Court. An asylum seeker has now taken a case against the state to the High Court saying, I came here as an asylum seeker, you didn't give me somewhere to live. Where's my place to live? Where's my accommodation? So we now have a situation where we don't have enough accommodation. We have literally run out of accommodation. You know, I don't know where we're going to start putting people next, including people coming into the country or people who are homeless here in Ireland themselves or in temporary accommodation. Yeah. So, but the government will say we can't cap the numbers because we have, under EU legislation, EU law, we can't. But I don't understand that, because there is a Geneva Convention, and the Dublin addendum to that particular convention suggests that you can refuse people if you believe they don't fit the criteria as an asylum seeker. But yet we don't seem to be using that.
We're not really good at that. Like, Ireland's culturally, like, we have our own kind of national culture, and you see it in a lot of different ways. Like, if someone who was corrupt all their life dies, all they've got to do is say, you know, throw one or two people out and say, ah, sure, but wasn't he grand and meant well? If we make bad policy decisions, you know, you apologize. And I think it's some, like, overture towards Catholic guilt. I'm actually not sure, but we're not good at the hard decisions. So when people come here and it's like, where are you coming from? I'm coming from 4,000 miles away. You know, have you got papers? No. But why? Like, how did you get wherever you were to here? Like, what's the backstory there? You know, why do you say you're from one country, but you don't speak that language? Like, there's lots of things that when you dig into people who actually work in these services, that they have to deal with that. But what happens in order to give people a fair outing or a fair case, you can't just, like, say, okay, stick you on a bus or a plane and drop you off somewhere. But we don't actually do a good job of getting to that point. And you see it across all aspects of society.
But when we see that 40% of people arriving are arriving with no documentation, no identification, and we just have to take
their word. Yeah, that's remarkable. I mean,
that is quite shocking.
We're the most westerly point in Europe. I mean, to get here without documentation, I would imagine, would be a struggle.
Well, at least two flights. For most countries from the African continent, it would be at least two flights.
I'm not talking about, like, Africans in particular or anything else. I'm just saying that, like, there is aspects of this which if there is good reasons for it, and maybe people say, yeah, there is a reason. Maybe when they get to one country, they get their papers confiscated, and so they have to leave without documentation.
Or is it possible that their asylum application in another country has already been rejected, be it in the UK or other countries around Europe, and the reason they would get rid of the documentation is so we don't know that, and we will give them another fair trial, I suppose.
If you look at where people seek to get away from, they tend to want to go to wherever is the best option that they have, and I think that's really natural. Like, that's a normal thing to want to do.
Everybody wants to provide for themselves. Everybody wants a better life.
If you look at, say, an Afghan asylum seeker, he ended up in Ireland, and yet, you know, Pakistan might not be a country that you or me might say, oh, we're dying to live there, but, you know, it tends to be a pretty stable society. They have common religious beliefs. There's a lot of crossover societally between the two nations in terms of where, like, they do have a big border fence between them for a different reason. But, you know, they've got a lot of cultural cohesion there.
But if they don't go there, they come here.
So what is the solution,
Carl, to all this? I mean, I'm looking at some of the texts coming in. And Richie says, open border policies are by definition extremist. Controlled immigration policies are rational and centrist. Yet those who support the latter are branded far-right extremists by the supporters of the former. And today on the show, we reached out to Paul Murphy, to Gary Gannon, obviously Paul has been tweeting quite a lot about it. Donna Cooney from the Green Party, from the area as well, from Clontarf, who has tweeted about it in the past. And Gary Gannon, who's organising the rally, as they're calling it, not a protest, a rally, on Saturday, which suggests that all refugees are welcome, everybody. And they're not willing to talk about it, or they're not willing to come on the show and debate with anybody who has the opposite view, it seems.
I think they are willing to talk about it, but only if you're going to agree with them. So I think that you don't fit the bill very well, because, like, Paul Murphy and Gary Gannon, they would stand up and say, look how brave we are, and this is so courageous, but it's actually quite cowardly to not be willing to have a discussion with someone who has a view that doesn't match with your own.
Okay, but when they say that all refugees are welcome or everybody's welcome, we would all like to think in an ideal world that's a great idea, because we can help as many people as we possibly can, because we don't know the backgrounds of people that are coming into this country, and some of them must have atrocious backgrounds. And obviously Ireland is a better life. But do you believe we have some sort of obligation as being part of the EU to offer people that better life?
I think to a certain extent that is a morally responsible thing, is that, like, if we've got a good country and it's not false. I mean, I don't buy into this island is full. That's just jingle.
Well, I don't think it's physical. We could have a population of 10 million people in this country easily.
We did in the past.
Yeah, easily. But the thing about it is, when they say it's full, I think the terminology is probably out of context. But we don't have the services to provide quickly for an increase in the population. I think that's the point that's been made.
You see, that's the problem, though. Is, like, we're discussing this as if these expressions actually mean something that has a definition. And what we quickly see is that even in this 30-second exchange, that it doesn't have a definition. And that's why when people say all refugees are welcome, that doesn't mean that everyone who wants to come here is welcome. What it means is that refugees of any sort that are refugees are welcome, but it doesn't mean that you get a place. So the kind of language that is used by, you know, the extreme left in this country and the far left, who, you know, they actually wear far left and, you know, badges like that as a badge of honor, which I find incredibly scary, because, you know, there's a site called Victims of Communism, and it shows how, like, 110 million people have been wiped out by communist regimes in the past. Like, even within living memory, 40 million Chinese people killed by their own government. Like, there's such terrible things with the far left, but they seem to get a free pass. Certainly, you know, I know this is the start of the show, and I'm not going to go into it because it's an ongoing investigation. But had someone driven into a pro-immigration protester, no matter what the reason for it, I think it would have been the lead story on every paper, because it was one that got branded as anti-immigration. You know, I haven't really seen it, like, on the front cover of papers. So I think there's a big disconnect between people's lived lives and their concerns and their neighbourhoods.
Is
that we're told to believe.
But finally, Carl, I don't know if you're time, and I appreciate your statement, but is there also a case, and I heard a commentator on radio, I think he was a historian actually, talking about the fact that maybe Ireland is 30 years behind other countries in Europe similar. For example, the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom would have had a similar problem going back 40, 50 years ago. We remember the Brixton riots, and we remember all that kind of stuff going back 40 years ago. Where Ireland, I suppose, was we only had an indigenous population up to about 15 or 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now we have, you know, we have people, we have diversity, we have people coming in from all different countries of the world, most of them legitimately coming here using a visa program or whatever it happens to be. But many people coming in as asylum seekers, seeking international protection, or more recently, obviously, Ukraine. But is it a case that we're just not used to it?
It could be the case. I mean, I don't know how to answer that, because I can really only speak for myself. I don't, like, I'm not like a representative of the whole country, and even the people who are elected.
But did your family come here illegally? Carl, did your family come here illegally? I don't think so.
No. Look, we came through a legal challenge, and you know, and I would always be saying yes to that. Like, I'm very pro-immigrant. I mean, the great thing economically about immigrants, certainly when they come legally, is that for every euro we spend on them, you get two euro back. They're actually a brilliant investment.
Absolutely.
But if someone comes in and, you know, they'll go through that channel, and then you're spending kind of 30,000 a year to provide services.
But no,
and maybe
country,
they're not able to work because we don't give them, like, at least if you're going to have people coming, make sure they have the ability to work, because otherwise you destroy their lives. You take.
Well, then they become a burden. They become a burden on the state. Then.
Well, they become a burden on themselves. Anyone forced into being non-productive, it's a painful thing for them. So, you know, I'd rather see a conversation from people who are saying, "Oh, all refugees welcome," to really start to have a conversation about all refugees have the right to work. Like, but you'll never hear that, because that's not actually what they want. They want to pursue a more kind of ideological agenda. And most of the people who say this stuff, you know, they live in nice houses, they're educated at private schools, they can afford stuff. Like, they're not the ones who are, say, living in East Wall. And the people who are in East Wall, you can call them any name you want, because they've been called names, townies, scroats, and everything else since time immemorial. You're not going to get through to them by abusing them. They're beyond that. But there is, like, all this name-calling and the branding, I think, is really people who find them distasteful for whatever reason. And so they want to, like, order them and exclude them.
Okay, and finally, just in relation to communication, this seems to be the biggest problem. The government, I believe, have created this problem between both sides, no matter which side you happen to agree with. The government have created this by a lack of transparency and a lack of communication. That's what they're being accused of constantly all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in the last week, we have heard Simon Harris and Leo Varadkar suggesting we need to up our game at Dublin Airport. We need to up our game when it comes to people coming in with no documentation. So essentially saying the same thing the protesters are saying, which is in a very different way.
Because the people are always ahead of the politicians. You know, it was the same during lockdown. People were like, this is crazy. And we had politicians and various academics, and they've all been proven wrong in time that, you know, it wasn't the best choice. But the people are always ahead of the politicians. And if people are upset about something, they're not making it up. They're not just waking up one day and say, oh, instead of having dinner with my mom or going and, you know, see my friends or play a game or do whatever you normally do, I'm gonna go hold up a placard and walk down a road to block traffic. I mean, seriously, like we must, there must be some pervasive belief, at least in some corners of official Ireland and media, to think that there's folks out there who really have nothing better to do than to scheme against other people for some random reason in order to feel fulfilled in their lives. And it's just not true. You know, the people protesting, they're normal people. They work, they have kids, they, you know, lives. They do all the regular stuff that everyone else does, and the branding and the name calling. It's just a way to shut them up. And it tends to be an effective way. And when you know, do start to shout those kinds
but
of things.
But there is racism. But without a doubt, Carl, you can't deny that some of the stuff that has been chanted and said and some of the placards are racist.
But Niall, I'm not. Look, if you read back through the things that I wrote on Twitter, yeah. I did actually say that I didn't encounter anyone I would call far right. But yeah. If you were, it would be a great place to show up. I used to be a member of a thing called the Socialist Workers' Party when I was young. I was, like, really misguided, didn't have a clue, so I grew up. But when I was in it, we used to do that all the time. Like, that was that was the go-to move. Find any kind of protest or march, either.
And hijack it.
We'd walk in there with giant placards and flags and megaphones, and we'd basically, you know, we would try and take it over. So I'm not saying that bad people don't exist. I mean, that'd be ridiculous. That's like thinking that it's never going to rain again. You know, of course those people are real. And I think the protesters themselves have to do a job to reject them. I think if you're at a protest and someone starts spouting that stuff, you should, you know, tell them you're not welcome here. Get out. You're not wanted. You're not part of what we're at. And stick to the message. You know, it's the same thing. Like, this stuff happens with social movements everywhere. Like, Black Lives Matter protesters should have gotten the people who were looting at those protests and said, you're not part of us. And because they didn't, they kind of lost a lot of their steam. And I think that's important. If you're trying to protest for social change, you've got to stay true to the message and be more like what Martin Luther King or Gandhi or other people who use protest as a means for change. You know, stick to the pure message that we're concerned and we want people helped, but we've got to do it right. And if we're not doing it right, then, you know, let's advocate for a better way.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on and explaining your tweets. Carl Dieter, financial analyst and also commentator, thank you for joining us on the show today. But I want to get your thoughts on this. And let's keep this a respectable conversation if we possibly can. I'd like to hear from both sides, by the way. If you're attending the peace rally, as they're calling it, and that's how they've named it, essentially it's a protest on the other side, isn't it? It's a protest against the protests. And that's happening on Saturday. And there also will be another protest for those who are anti-immigration, if that's the wording that's being used. In other words, those people who believe that there should be restrictions on the amount of people that come into Ireland. They will also be protesting on the same day. And I once again, urge all those involved on both sides of this debate. And there are two sides to this debate. I would urge all to do it peacefully. And let's not have a revisit of what happened last night. Again, I can't discuss that too much because somebody is being charged as we speak in relation to that. But looking at the Red Sea poll, it does definitely seem that the vast majority of the people of Ireland, 83% of those surveyed disagreed that Ireland has the services to cater for the number of people arriving here. In other words, they believe we don't have the services. We can't cope. But yet the government are insistent that this will continue. Does that make sense to you? Most people are empathetic towards Ukrainian refugees coming to Ireland and less empathetic towards other nationalities, it seems. Almost two-thirds of people, 64%, disagreed that Ireland should continue to take an unlimited number of refugees fleeing war in the Ukraine. And that figure rose to 70% among respondents 35 to 54. 70% of people, working people in this country, believe we should stop taking in refugees, that it shouldn't be an unlimited number, that we need to put a cap on it. Yet the government parties, the people you voted for, are not listening. They're saying they're going to keep doing it. So far, in the last year in this country, we've taken in approximately 100,000 people between people seeking international protection and Ukrainians. Just over half of the people believe the recent rise in protests outside refugee asylum seeker accommodation are not justified. So 50% of people believe you shouldn't be doing your protesting outside the refugee accommodation. And I'm happy to see that doesn't seem to be happening as much now. It did in the initial stages. Over a third of people said they would not support a migrant accommodation centre in their area. Not in my backyard. 39% in Dublin, 42%, almost half of the people between 35 and 54 years of age, according to Red Sea, said they would not support accommodating migrants beside their home. So not in my backyard. What does that tell you? It tells you that clearly the government are not listening. That's what it tells you. That we can't just keep continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. We just can't. But I want to know how you feel about it. Will you be going to the peace rally on Saturday? Will you be heading along, apart from the fact you get to see Christy Moore for free? Will you be heading along? Or will you be going to the other protest who believe that we need to stop immigration, that we have enough? Or we can't do much more. We don't have the surfaces.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
By the way, just to mention as well, another part of that Red Sea poll, which I found extremely interesting, was only 36% of people who are polled believe that Ireland should be supplying weapons to Ukraine. So that means that the majority of people in Ireland believe we should not be getting involved in a war. And that, I think that goes without saying. I think most of us want peace, don't we? Only 35% of people said they would support a migrant accommodation centre in their area. Only 35%. 50% said they wouldn't, and 15% said they were unsure, depending on where it was and who was in it. The number is 087 188 0008. Robbie, you're on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hey, you know, I'll help you.
Okay, so here's a Red Sea poll conducted by Virgin Media, which basically says exactly what the protesters have been saying for the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, it was interesting. Myself and my wife were sitting down watching the news last night, and the results of the poll came up. And in a way, I wasn't really surprised, to be honest with you, you know. My thing is that, like, I'm like most people, I have the genuine worries in relation to the amount of refugees coming into the country because...
Well, and what are your worries? What are the concerns?
I suppose it's the amount that we're taking in and people... Like, the one thing that I had a major problem with was just before or after Christmas that some refugees were told, here's 20 euros, go live in the street. I don't think that's humane in a way that we're bringing people in from another country. And
to be homeless,
to go sleep in the street. I think that's wrong.
Well, we're seeing the results of that today, because today there's a case in the High Court where an Afghan man who arrived here last month wasn't given accommodation because we don't have it, and he was basically homeless on the streets, and now he's suing the state.
I heard you saying that to Carl. That was the force I heard.
It's in the Irish Independent this morning. Yeah.
But I think, and a lot of the anger is being directed towards the refugees, where it really should be directed toward Leinster House, you know. Like, I mean, the thing is that...
But Leinster House have been ignoring the people, and the answer to everything that's asked of Leinster House up to the last week, where things seem to have changed a little bit, is are just a bunch of right-wing racists.
Well, now I'll come back to that in a minute. But the problem is that, like, we do have EU legislation that dictates, in a sense, of what our immigration policy is. A lot of people don't know that, but we're taking our line from the European Union.
Of course, yes.
You vote with that in, and Lisbon or Nice, one of the other, I can't remember which one it was, but that's there in legislation, you know. So, but the problem we have is, especially with Varadkar, is that we always have to be best in class in Europe, don't we? Always have to be best in class. And we always have to be, you know, the best people, the best in line, and what Europe says, we always do, you know. And for me, that's because Varadkar's looking to get a nice big commissioner's job over in Europe when he finishes.
Well, you would imagine most politicians are probably looking to get a nice big job in Europe, just like Pascal.
But like, we just have to be the best in class all the time. We can't be torn around every now and again and say, you know what, no.
We can't
we don't
do
want
it.
That.
Well, I mean, we've seen France have taken in 0.1% of their population, 0.01% of the population, where we've taken in 1%, probably 10 times as much per head of population.
And as a landmass and as a population, France outgrows us a hell of a lot more, you know what I mean? But the thing is, when you were saying, like,
But the government have said they cannot cap the numbers because it will be against the EU legislation. But we don't need to cap the numbers. If we actually did the job properly, we would need to.
Going around and say, here, look, we can't take any more. Simple as that. Don't be saying that.
Unfortunately, we've signed up to Europe. We can't say that. But what we can do is demand that people come here, you know, with documentation, for example. And that if you don't have documentation, or if you've come from the what they call the second safe port, that you can be returned there by deportation. So in other words, we can enforce immigration policy.
We can, but the thing is, what they have to do is they kind of have to say to Europe, how the hell are they getting through to us? Who's not doing their job on the other side of that aeroplane?
Okay, with regards to the protests themselves, what's your feeling on the protests? Would you go to it?
I went to one in Mullingar with my sister because she was going up on her own, and she's a lovely person. And
what was your feeling? What was the sense you got?
The sense when I was up there was that the sense that I thought it would have been that there's a lot of genuine, and there is an awful lot of genuine. 95% of the people that go to these protests, from what I've seen, are genuine, decent, concerned people. But the problem is that at these protests, they're being led by groups who I'm not going to give the airtime and call out their names because I've absolutely no time for them. And they are racist. And they are racist. Even if these people were not living in this country, they would still hate them for the colour of their skin if they were living elsewhere.
Absolutely. So in other words, as Carl Dieter said, you know, I mean, these are ideal opportunities for these protests to be hijacked by individuals who are all aware, by the way, the names of a lot of these individuals who will hijack these protests.
And I could name them, and I won't, because I wouldn't give them the airtime.
I wouldn't give them the money from the lawyer who'll sue us afterwards. Yeah,
exactly.
Do me a favour. Stay there, Robbie. Let me go to Marion as well. Marion, you're on Ireland's Classics Radio. How are you doing, Marion?
How are you, Niall? What your other guests were saying there, I very much agree with to begin with. As I highlighted to you before, for example, it's astonishing that the likes of Paul Murphy, who claimed to be representing the working class, agrees with mass migration into the working class area of unvetted men, young men.
Well, the government will claim they're not unvetted. That's what Leo Varadkar said last week.
Well, that's what they say, you know, when it comes to reality.
Well, I'm unsure as how you vet somebody, unless you have fingerprinting from Interpol, how you can vet somebody when they have no passport or no documentation. But according to immigration, they can use fingerprints or take people's fingerprints to and then check with Interpol.
But one of the points I brought up to you before, for example, we had Josepha Madigan many, many years ago, when she was a councillor, objected to itinerant
members of the travelling community, yes.
Which was affecting her constituents. And yet, in the D4 area again, attempts were made when migrants, when there was plans by the government to place migrants into Balls Bridge. Then you had the local residents association consisting of people that specialise in the law, bring it to the High Court, and it was stopped. And we currently have, in Balls Bridge, Jury's Hotel lying idle. Where's Paul Murphy?
So, in other words, if we're to be fair, why aren't they going into the more leafy suburbs?
Exactly it. Where is Paul Murphy saying, well, why don't we send him into the leafy area rather than attack people in East Wall?
Okay, but will you be attending, do you attend either protest on the side of refugees, which is, you know, that you believe all are welcome, or against immigration? Or mass immigration?
I haven't been attending either protest to begin with. Well, the title is refugees, but we've no proof because we have people come here from Georgia, and yet the president of Georgia said there's just no reason to be fleeing this country.
But that's up to the individuals who assess, I suppose, you know, asylum seekers or people seeking international protection to assess their case. And I like you, like everybody else, if they don't qualify under the criteria of the convention, well, I suppose the law clearly states that they must be deported back to where they came from.
But they're not being deported. 80% are not being deported.
Well, look, again, according to Leo Varadkar, people are being deported.
Well, that's what he says. But there's people, even criminals, haven't been forcibly deported in this country.
Okay.
There has been coverage by Brits.
Sorry, Robbie.
Well, I don't assume criminals. I'm not sure what she means by that. But I know that people have been in jail.
Sorry.
You mean people who are here as asylum seekers who commit crimes?
And have committed crimes and have served their time in jail and have not been forcefully deported back to the country. There has been coverage on grip.ie.
There was one particular case, I remember, of a taxi driver who had actually assaulted a woman. I do know some of the stuff that you're referring to.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Well, right, just let me read this out. Immigration topic. I'm a South African doctor who was recruited to Ireland due to the lack of doctors who all seem to be leaving for brighter skies in Australia. I wish Irish people would stop their biased generalisations. Immigration into Ireland was a year-long process for myself or my husband and I. I'm assuming by that you mean you went through a whole visa process. We were checked within an inch of our lives. We had to pay prepaid tax for 18 months. We had to take a private medical insurance for 1 year. Our rent is 4,000 a month. And yes, xenophobic comments have been plenty and often vicious. I would agree with that. Life is not perfect anywhere. And Irish people need to understand that diversity makes for a better society. Racism is one thing, but xenophobia is based on complete ignorance. I get what you're saying, and as Carl Dieter said, for every immigrant that comes into the country and costs €1, we'll get €2 back. And that's absolutely true, provided people are going through a proper immigration process, which you did. I think that that's not what we're referring to. Okay, anyway, let me just go back to Pat, if I can. Pat, you're in Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hey, well, how you doing? Yeah, and do you know what? Funny enough, I was listening to this morning to the radio, and there was a guy on, he was a headmaster in school. And there's a shortage of, back to the subject we were talking about yesterday, there's actually a shortage of teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And he was saying that there were some of the teachers he tried to hire, he couldn't, because they had nowhere to live.
Yeah.
But you know, they not literally nowhere to live. They had to go back to their own home place or whatever, you know, back to their mother and fathers, whether it be the west of Ireland or whatever it was, that they could not afford, they couldn't find a place to live in Dublin. Now,
but you can if you're willing to pay $3,000 for a one-bed apartment.
Know, even at that, no, yeah. I'm telling you now, right, even at that, you won't find a place.
Yep.
Take my word for it. Well, I have a daughter now and a fiancée and a baby living in my house at the moment, and they've nowhere to go. They have, obviously, they've somewhere to go, but what I'm saying is the two of them have good jobs, and I mean good jobs, and they can't find anywhere.
Yeah.
They can't buy a house because, you know what I mean, they obviously the price of housing, you know, the so-called affordable housing in the UAE. Now, another thing, Noel, a few years back when you had the Syrian conflict, right, and obviously it's still ongoing, the America and the West, they asked Turkey to take in refugees, so many million, to take them on board, right? And the local people that were putting them into the villages said no, they wouldn't accept them. So what they did was, they said, right, we you can take so many, and we will put in X amount of infrastructure, we put in new schools, new whatever we had to put in. So you as a community will benefit as well.
Real people, real opinions, Real Talk Radio, the multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Ireland's classic.